A raiding party of about 4 dozen arrived at ExxonMobil's headquarters in Irving, Texas, shortly before 8 in the morning on May 27, 2003. The raiders divided themselves into 3 units. The first group pulled up at the main entrance in 2 panel trucks marked ExxonMobil Global Warming Crimes Unit. They scrambled out, blocked the driveway, and chained themselves to the trucks in front of the gate. A second team wearing business suits and toting briefcases arrived at the maintenance gate at the rear of the 100-acre campus. They cut a lock and drove inside in 2 rented Jaguars. 2 vans pulled up at the delivery gate, carrying the 3rd unit of attackers. Most of that group had dressed in tiger costumes, mocking Exxon's old "put a tiger in your tank" advertising slogan. They unpacked a ladder and a raft and climbed over the gate, chaining it shut behind them. Some of them dragged their raft to the pond within view of the executive suites and set themselves afloat. Other tigers climbed onto the roof, where they unfolded a banner that declared ExxonMobil's headquarters to be a global warming crime scene, and tossed around a balloon designed as a globe. The protesters wearing business suits drove their Jaguars across an unpaved road, entered the employee garage, and found their way inside the headquarters building. They fanned out and offered spontaneous lectures and leaflets on climate change to bemused ExxonMobil executives and staff. 2 activists in tiger suits also made it inside the headquarters, leading some of the oil corporation's employees to think that a terrorist attack might be underway. The Irving Fire Department eventually brought in one of its ladder trucks to remove the tigers on the roof. It had taken Greenpeace 3 months and several tens of thousands of dollars to plan the raid. It did so in strict secrecy. The group's activist coordinator, Maria Ramos, had dispatched a recruiting notice seeking those who might be interested in challenging the world's largest company and engaging in guerrilla tactics. One of the volunteers, Anne Nunn, traveled from Australia, where she had recently completed a raid on a mobile tanker off the Australian coast, part of a spreading worldwide campaign against the oil corporation. The Irving raid was timed to influence news headlines before ExxonMobil's 2003 annual shareholder meeting. It succeeded. "If you're a fringe, radical organization like Greenpeace," remarked Tom Sirigliano of the corporation's public affairs department, "you need a target, you need an enemy, and you need a villain." Increasingly, inside ExxonMobil, the corporation's image strategists reflected upon whether they could find some way not to play the role Greenpeace had assigned them. The raid provided additional evidence, if more was required by this time, that Lee Raymond's visibility on the climate issue had drawn extraordinary attention that was unlikely to dissipate. The attention had reached a point where it was undermining Raymond's own cause. ExxonMobil's many allies in Washington who opposed the Kyoto Protocol on economic and fairness grounds, utilities, carmakers, free market conservatives in academia and journalism, found themselves tarred by the accusation that all of their arguments might be merely a front for the oil industry's largest corporation. ExxonMobil executives consoled themselves by saying that the Greenpeace campaign was just part of the price of doing business in the modern oil industry. In the marketplace of non-profit fundraising, ExxonMobil's notoriety offered an attractive opportunity for environmentalists to raise money by promising to hold big oil to account, and there was nothing much they could do about that. The corporation's executives did not have to passively accept Greenpeace's assault, however. After the Irving raid, ExxonMobil approached its Greenpeace problem as an aggressive litigator would. The corporation encouraged the Dallas County District Attorney to prosecute fully the Greenpeace protesters who had participated in the Irving action. ExxonMobil also sued Greenpeace and 36 individuals who had been arrested on its campus. By threatening fines and jail terms, the corporation eventually won a 7-year standstill accord, in which Greenpeace agreed not to commit any crimes while campaigning against the corporation. As a result of this settlement, the group's anti-Exxon campaign migrated from newsmaking direct action and civil disobedience into the less direct online publishing. Investigators from the Internal Revenue Service turned up at the Chinatown office in Washington to conduct an audit. A small nonprofit group called Public Interest Watch had raised questions with the IRS about whether Greenpeace was compliant with federal laws governing groups that received tax-deductible contributions. Greenpeace passed the audit and opened its own investigation of Public Interest Watch. The group's tax form, filed about 2 months after the activists in tiger costumes had scaled the Irving headquarters roof, showed that a single donor was responsible for $120,000 of Public Interest Watch's $124,000 in annual revenue. ExxonMobil Corporation.